This is the Division 2, Division 3 podcast.
Welcome to the championship edition of the NCAA Division 2, Division 3 podcast. We have an excellent slate of championship games coming up this weekend. In D2, we have Merrimack versus Limestone. This is a rematch of a championship game 2 years ago that Limestone took home. We also have in D3 two first-time championship participants. A really exciting tournament ended with Amherst facing Cabrini at Lincoln Financial Field on Sunday. What a week of lacrosse. I'm sure a lot of people were watching the D1 games on ESPNU, but at the same time on Saturday and Sunday was some really exciting action. And Kyle, Sunday, you know, I was driving home from Hartford and, you know, we were trying to connect via Slack as much as possible, and you were kind of freaking out about the games that were going on. Can you just take me through the roller coaster of Sunday's D3 action?
I mean, all of the games, they didn't get the OT finishes, right? Like, we didn't get that, really. But except for Saturday's game with Merrimack and Lemoyne, where Merrimack scored in OT, and I thought that, definitely thought Lemoyne was going to win, and then Merrimack just Merrimacked at the end and came all the way back. But the other three games to set everything up on Sunday were incredible. You know, they were basically all come from behinds except for Amherst and Williams. And Williams came back and tied it several times with Amherst in the second half and kind of towards the end of the first. I was just really impressed with the effort from all the teams. Not that, like, you would think they would have bad efforts, but they all played up. Do you know what I mean? Like, every team played up to their opponent, especially... And finally, Cabrini.
Yeah, and that's the one that I think every team is focusing on, Cabrini, right? Every person, every media member, all the national stories about the D3 tournament are kind of focused on Cabrini slaying the dragon that is Salisbury in the South. And man, you know, they've basically avenged both of their losses from the regular season. York with that incredible comeback win with a diving goal last week. Then they beat Salisbury in the semifinal game. And then you also have on the other side Amherst beating the team that beat it twice during the season. Josh, you played, you know, high-level Division III lacrosse. And what's it like playing a team multiple times? And, you know, how does that maybe change things when you go into the second or third matchup?
I don't think it's that difference, that crazy. I think that, like, the strategery kind of goes out the window. It's kind of you just playing yourself. It's kind of you just challenging yourself to play your best ball because everyone knows who the best players are. Everyone knows everyone's tendencies, you know, whether they're going to, you know, probably be higher or lower when it comes to face-off percentage at, you know, at the X. So I think it's really just, you know, you versus yourself. And can we play our best version of whatever our team lacrosse is, whether it's Cabrini or Amherst lacrosse, and doing those things the right way? Because I think at the end of the day, you're playing someone two or three times, you know, the little trick plays, you might have one or two here or there, little things, but, you know, tendencies are really known. There's a ton of film plus the, you know, the actual experience of you playing against these teams. So I think it's really just, you know, your team, Cabrini versus Cabrini. Can they play the best version of Cabrini lacrosse? And I don't think that there's that much that goes into that other than, you know, maybe the mental aspect is, you know, you got to throw out like, hey, we beat them once, they beat us. Like, you know, the who beat who mentality kind of can't live there. So, you've got to show up and like I said, play against yourself kind of.
And that's something that Coach Kadelka later in this podcast, we interview him talking about being a first time participant in the NCAA tournament championship game and some of the strategic things that go into that and a little bit about each team. That's one of the things that he says is, you know, be true to yourself. If being Lynchburg got you to this point, then you be Lynchburg in that game, etc. So we have that interview towards the end of this podcast. One quick aside before we talk in depth about the games is right now on InsideLacrosse.com, we've got a really meaningful story about Timmy Brooks at Cabrini. You know, he is someone who was in the limelight for the worst of reasons several years ago. You know, he was arrested for dealing drugs, and his face was plastered all over the national media. he's recovered. He went to recovery for, you know, some drug and alcohol issues. He went to prison. He's ended up at Cabrini and has been truly a remarkable person for that program. You know, I had the privilege of talking to him on the phone a few times for this story that Joe Santoliquido did. I went to practice this week where we did some photos. Just truly a great inspirational person, you know, someone who's made a mistake but has learned from it and become better for it. And I just wanted to shed a little bit of light on that story. We actually started the process for that story. It was either late February or early March. So just to kind of put some context of how these things come together, we had no idea he was going to make this run with Cabrini to the NCAA Tournament Championship game. Joe Santoliquido was covering a Penn game for us and some parents there that, you know, he has interacted with, you know, started talking to him about Brooks and everything he's done that's been positive since, you know, that day several years ago. Got connected with him, he did some interviews, and we've kind of had some back and forth since then, and just really proud of that story, and I hope everyone checks it out and learns something from it, and just, you know, take some time to maybe digest something that's a really meaningful, powerful story. So he'll be playing at Lincoln Financial Field on Sunday. Quite a departure from where he was a few years back. Let's talk about these games. Cabrini versus Amherst. Let's talk about this first. You know, when we sat here in, whether it was October, November, doing the preseason stuff for Face Off Yearbook, or whether we were podcasting in January or February, Amherst was a team that I think we all had kind of circled as they could be here. When they beat RIT, I think we really started to believe that this is a very real possibility. They had those losses against Williams, but still were in that upper echelon conversation the whole time. Cabrini, there's been more doubt about the whole year. You know, we had them ranked number 7 in the preseason. We knew they were very good, but I think the kind of working philosophy on them was they're going to be a very good team that falls in the quarterfinals or the semifinals because Salisbury is there or York is there, or just they don't have a history of doing it, even though Amherst also doesn't have a history of doing it. Kyle, take a bigger picture and just think of that conversation and what it's taken to get here for both Amherst and Cabrini.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm more familiar with Amherst, and I've covered, I think, 4 games now, if not 3 in person of theirs. And, you know, Coach Thompson is he's an impressive guy. You know, I interview a ton of coaches and a ton of players, and he stands out as a guy who will, like, look you in the eye and tell you, you know, what they were doing. And he'll tell you some off-record stuff and some on-record stuff. You know, I think that my interactions with him have been so positive, and he's such a positive person, even when he's coaching. You know, a lot of these guys have, like, kind of like that double life where they're, like, one way on the sideline and one way off. I think he's pretty consistent, and that team is very consistent. And it's funny, we talk about guys like Evan Wolf, Colin Minicus on offense, but, you know, they got guys like Tamer Sullivan on defense, and they really pride themselves on defense. They cheer on the sideline as much for defensive tips as they do great goals. And it's a very cohesive team philosophy for them. I think that even Coach might have been a little, I mean, after the Tufts game, he did, like, you know, he was going to walk back to the locker room, and he went back to the goal and was like, hey, I need, like, a moment. And he just, like, walked around and just collected himself to come back. You know, like, you could tell it was an emotional thing for him to, like, get over this hump and get to this game. And I don't see anything changing against Cabrini. Now, I did watch the Cabrini-Salisbury game, like, start to finish, and I think that the one thing everyone is going to be talking about is, how do you stop Jordan Krug? Because I don't know the answer to that. I mean, he was sticking shots from, like, 16, 17 yards out, and he was also getting past 2-3 guys. He was a monster. I don't know what you do to address him other than sliding two guys and hoping that the guy he passes to misses. He's incredible. And I think that Cabrini doesn't start and end there, but I think that their defense as well was very impressive against Salisbury. They figured out the Salisbury overload. It took them a while. And I think, Josh, I texted you about this. I can't believe people don't adjust to the overload quick enough. But Cabrini did, and, you know, they stacked that side and prevented, you know, what the easy shots that Salisbury gets when you slide upfield. And that's really, as much as Krug was the key to that victory for them in my mind.
Josh, you just heard Kyle talk about Coach Thompson, and you've said to me many times about just Coach Colfer's reputation among the D3 coaching community. I had the privilege of going to practice and kind of seeing him in action for 2 hours just the other day. But Josh, what do people think of him? You know, I think he has just a really kind of pristine reputation among his peers.
I think the common comment that I hear the most is just like, you know, and I've never met him personally. This is from, you know, guys that I played with or now coaching and stuff like that, is like, he's the man. And nothing else more than that. You know, I think he has a really laid back personality, but he's a really good coach and a really good person. And not that that's not a common trait, you know, amongst all coaches, but I think he stands out, in a lot of ways. And I hear that from, you know, coaches and teams that play them on a regular basis. It's just like, yeah, he's the man. You know, he's a great guy to be around. He's a great leader of young men. So he's a really respected coach, you know, in the community. And what we talk about, it's funny, you were talking about, you know, Cabrini, not like flying under the radar, but, you know, they've been on the radar for a really long time. If they've flown under the radar, it's because they played in a conference that they had won for like 20 some odd years in a row. You know, they were in a conference this year, so they got the lone Pool B bid, but they've been knocking the door for years. You know, they've made a couple quarterfinals, had never really been able to just kind of knock down that door and push through. And, you know, Kyle talks about Krug a lot too. And I think what makes Cabrini so dangerous is, like, you know, Salisbury tried to shut him off in the third quarter after he just went off in the first half. And he was able to get the ball out of his stick, but also, you know, come off picks and get creative. And they have other guys who stepped up and made some great plays for them. So, you know, the concept of, like, just getting out of his stick could work, but he's going to draw so much attention that they have enough playmakers on the backside that they're going to be able to take advantage of those. You know, they love the dive. They're a team that's really exciting to watch. The Tyler Kostak kid had a couple diving opportunities, you know, that we've talked a lot about on this podcast, is how, you know, those calls are adjudicated and they're controversial, but they're a team that's not afraid to take chances. And those are the kind of teams that I want to see playing in championship weekend. You know, I think Amherst averages 18 goals a game and Cabrini averages 17. I don't know if there's been a higher goals per game average amongst two teams in Division III national championship in the last 10 years, probably. So Coach Colfer's got his guys dialed in. I really do think it's going to be an amazing game.
Josh, to get back to your point, you know, one of the things that I found really interesting was that game against York, that semifinal game. I was there, and I asked Colfer, you know, what did you talk about in that timeout that led to the game-winning goal? I think it speaks to his personality and his style of coaching, when he says, hey, I can't take credit for it. I don't know what was said. I work with the defense, so, you know, I let my offensive guy take care of it. You know, he's one of those guys who really empowers his assistants to make decisions. And I think that's important, you know, particularly at a level where resources are, you know, it's not like D1 where you have all the resources in the world, at least at the high level. You know, you got to let your guys do their job and hire good people and work on the culture as your primary directive as a head coach. And he's done that, and he's made a culture that's got them to this point. Now, sitting a few days from a national championship game in their backyard at Lincoln Financial Field, the big challenge for him is dealing with that very fact. They're going to have more attention on them than Amherst will. They've got the local media that's going to be coming out to practice. You know, they've got radio spots that they'll be doing. There's going to be that recurring theme of the hometown team here at the NCAA championship. And they haven't been there before, so they got to deal with all the logistics of, like, when do you get to the banquet? When do you go to your practice? You know, when do you get to walk through at the stadium? All those things that you never deal with, that you have to deal with for the first time. You know, he said to me when I was at practice, he said, every game up until this point has felt like a D3 game. Now it doesn't. You know, now that's just something completely different. You know, he's been doing his homework. He reached out to Ronnie Caputo, at Duke. You know, it's a former player, former teammate of his at Scranton to get some advice. You know, he reached out to John Raba. He's reached out to a number of D3 coaches, you know, who have been there pretty recently. So, you know, he's doing the homework and trying to figure out the best way to make this as normal as possible. Looking at it from a matchup perspective, though, Kyle, what's the one area of the field that maybe could be the... I think we all think that it's going to be a close game and probably a fairly high-scoring game. Kyle, what's maybe the part of the field that's going to determine one or two goal ways in one way or the other?
I think the matchup is Tabor Sullivan versus Jordan Krug for both teams, actually. When I talked to Coach Thompson after they beat Bates for the first time in the regular season, he told me that Tamir Sullivan is the best defender in the country. And I kind of, I didn't laugh, but I gave him a look and he's like, no, I'm serious. I am serious. He is the best. So I think that's one we definitely have to watch. I think the face-off battle will be interesting because I think that if Amherst has any advantage in the middle of the field, it's getting the ball up and out off the ground. I think from what I saw from Cabrini against Salisbury, they were not great at that when it was a crowd around the ball. But also Salisbury is so good at that, it's hard to like to tell. But I think that that's definitely a space to watch. And, you know, between the pipes, Gib Versfeld is the guy now. And, you know, we talked last week on the podcast about them having three capable starting level goalies. But I think Versfeld is the guy they're going to go with. And if I'm going to say a weakness there, I think he gives up rebounds. But I also think that their defense is really good off the ground, like I was saying earlier. So that's an area that I would watch going into the championship game for sure.
Josh, what are your matchup thoughts?
Yeah, I think, you know, you're always going to be talking about the best players, and you want them to shine the brightest. So, you know, the Krug matchup is certainly going to be an intriguing one. I also don't want to overlook the fact that this is Amherst's first time there. Yeah, they've gotten a lot of attention, but this is their first time playing in, you know, an NFL stadium probably, you know, so they're practicing and doing whatever. So, you know, it's their first time there too, and this moment's going to be big for them as well. I think, you know, like I said, you look at your stars, you look to Krug for Cabrini, you look for Wolf, who has 115 points for Amherst, but I do think the face-off effect is going to be huge. Luke McCallion for Cabrini is going about like 57-58%. I think he did a really good job against a Salisbury kid who had been pretty dominant all year. He was able to muck it up, but also was able to get in some of those ground balls. And to Kyle's point, you know, they did a pretty good job against a Salisbury team that kind of, you know, owns that part of the field and has historically owned that part of the field. But the Amherst kid has been a huge, you know, boost for them this year. Dylan Finazzo has gone like, I think exactly at 60%, 111 of 185, this season. And I think that that's going to be a huge part of it because we're talking about a game that's high scoring, you know, time of possession, you know, the most possessions obviously are a huge advantage in this game. When defense is, you know, not the thing that's going to be talked about the most, in terms of like, you know, the sexiness of this game. So I think that the Finazzo McCallion matchup at the face-off fest is going to be huge. And, you know, we're going to be talking about guys who are on the wings, those, you know, short stick D middies. I also think are going to be huge in this game. And what's cool about it also is both teams have showed zone. You know, we've talked about earlier in the season how Cabrini has gone to like a backer zone and played a zone that's thrown teams off. You know, we saw Amherst do that against Williams last week. So I think what's cool is both of these teams have a million different things they can pull out. But I think they both have seen a million different things this year. So we're talking about two teams that are really battle-tested. There's nothing either of these teams have really seen. They're going to be throwing punches early and often. And it's going to come down to, you know, who's that senior that's going to make a play for this team or the other. And, you know, a couple of balls bouncing the other way. You know, it's a game of runs. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see where those advantages lie. Because I think there could be someone we're not even talking about that's going to step up and make a play that, you know, gives one team a national championship and sends another home. So I think it's going to be a really interesting game, and there's a lot of intriguing little nuances to it that are, you know, really intriguing to me.
One thing that hasn't been brought up yet, that an area that I think Amherst has an advantage, is the short stick D-middy group. Because really at Amherst, they're not D-middies. They're just two-way midfielders who play really good defense. I think that's an area where they could maybe capitalize a little bit because, you know, if Krug doesn't just win his matchup and put up a performance like he has done the past 2 weeks, you know, it's going to come down to that third or fourth option, someone who's going to be on a short stick And if Amherst has the edge there, you know, that could be a determining factor. But I really, really, really like Riley White in net for Cabrini. 10 saves in the first half against York. You know, if he doesn't make one of those, that game is completely different, and York is here. You know, I think he's the best goalie right now in this game. I know Amherst has kind of done a little bit of the switching who's in net for them. He's Riley White is consistent force. He's playing the best lacrosse of his season right now. He could potentially steal a few goals away from Amherst, not just make the saves he should, but make several that he shouldn't. And, you know, if that frustrates Amherst, you know, they take a lot of shots. They have a lot of shooters. That could make a long day for the Mammoths in this game. So let's get down to brass tacks and let's pick. Kyle, who's your winner?
I mean, I kind of have to go with Amherst, don't I? I know that I really want a Krug Life shirt. I already like put it out there on Twitter. I want that hashtag Krug Life shirt, but it's hard. It actually is hard to like emotionally separate when you cover a team and you get like a good relationship going with the coach and the team, and you kind of see their strengths and weaknesses. I mean, we're talking at the Mustang Classic. Like, I think we just saw a possible national championship like game here when Amherst beat RIT. And I remember saying, like, I think Amherst can do this just like Wesleyan did it last year. You know, I just think that they're so – the thing about NESCAC teams – and listen, I know that we cover NESCAC teams, quote-unquote, too much. Here's the thing. It's all iron sharpens iron with that entire conference. They are playing huge games every week. I don't know if you can say that about any other conference in Division III lacrosse. Is that a fair statement?
That's definitely conference-wise, fair. It is. But Cabrini also just knocked off York and Salisbury. So, like, conference-wise, you know, from February or March to now, for sure. But, like, you can't discount the fact that Cabrini just knocked off a number 2 and 4 team or whatever it was in the same week. So, like, I totally understand what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. I'm not discounting Cabrini at all. I think that Amherst has to play their best game to win. I absolutely do. But I can't pick against a team that I've seen play so many different. I mean, and again, and I'm admitting to the bias, right? Like, and not even the Northern bias, the times I've seen them bias and times I have seen them succeed in person bias. And that's real. And I will go with that because I believe in that. And I think that the team is so complete. I mean, if you shut off Colin Minicus, Evan Wolf's going to get 8 points. You know, you handle Wolf, you hold Wolf down to 3 goals, and McAfee's going to come in with 6. You know, it's one of these teams that is so malleable and so talented. And the thing that I've talked to other coaches about in the NESCAC, specifically John Reba, he was telling us that they're so, so deep all over the field. And that is a huge bonus in a game like this, is being deep and calling on guys, because the guys have that experience. They cycle guys throughout. You know, they run like 3 long poles. They don't run 2 or 1. They have 2 faceoff guys who are very good. They have 3 goalies that are very good. They have 4 guys that attack. John Coffey is phenomenal, but because Colin Minicus and Evan Wolf are out there, everyone talks about them first and then him. But he's amazing off ball. So you have all of these ingredients for a super adaptable team. And I think that combined with, you know, me not knowing as much about Cabrini is going to result in me picking Amherst. But that's not a slight on Cabrini at all. I just think that, you know, this adaptability, this malleability that Amherst has to play all these different styles of lacrosse is such a huge bonus, because you don't know what the game's going to be like. We're sitting here talking about it could be this huge high-scoring affair. It could be slow. Amherst can play slow. I'm sure Cabrini can too. I can't pick against them. You know, I know too much. I know where all the bodies are. I can't pick against them. I'm sorry.
Josh, what's your pick?
I really love the Timmy Brooks story, and I love, you know, he also haven't talked about. He also was an Amherst commit at one point, which I think is really, really cool as well. I don't want to. It's really tough for me. I think I'm rooting for Cabrini because of the Timmy Brooks story. Also, you know, we're talking about biases. I think the South. We talked a lot more about the North than we have the South, but I also think that that has been for a good reason, and that's because I think the North has been where the best team has been playing all season. Not taking anything away from Cabrini, York, Salisbury, whoever else. I do think Amherst wins this game. I think it's a one or two goal game, though, for sure. I think that Cabrini playing in their backyard at the Link, home of the Birds, I think that they are going to have a little bit of like a swagger and edge about them. They have a, you know, where those kids are from, and you know, there's a lot of PA and, you know, Delco, Delaware County kids, and they're going to be tough and gritty, and they're not going to be scared of anything. So yeah, I think I said it already. I'm going to go Amherst, but there's a I'm going to be rooting for the boys in blue. I think I really think Cabrini can do it, but I want to eliminate that bias a little bit, and I think Amherst is, the most complete team, to Kyle's point, this season, and I think that depth, ability to score and push transition and get make little plays in the middle of the field on a constant basis is going to be a bit too much. It's a different monster than Salisbury is. You know, they've slayed that beast. I think this is a completely different one. So I'm going to go with the Mammoths.
Gotcha. So one thing you're not talking about with the Philly, all the Philly kids, you got Evan Wolf coming back to Philly, hoping to win a national championship in his home NFL stadium. He's probably getting tired of all the Patriots love up there in the Northeast. So he's going to be in the friendly confines of Lincoln Financial Field. But
I'm sure this means you're going to pick Cabrini because Kyle and I picked Amherst.
No, I'm picking Cabrini for sure. Not because of I thought you were going to steal my thunder and pick Cabrini, and I was going to be kind of pissed at you. But no, I'm going Cabrini, and I think it's a fair thing to say that Amherst, top to bottom, has more talent on their team. I still think Cabrini's going to win. I think we just see it all the time in sports, and I hope this doesn't sound like a cop-out, but whatever that intangible thing that happens with the team, that's happened with Cabrini over these past 4 weeks of the lacrosse season. Something where they've just taken it to a new level at the exact right time. Their best player is playing the best lacrosse in the country right now, and he could single-handedly do it with another 7-goal game. I just think Cabrini has that thing, and this is their year. Not taken away from Amherst, because they played some amazing lacrosse to get to this stretch. But I like Cabrini in this game. Moving on.
Love it. I love it. Matt also loves Philly. Let it be known that Matt loves Philly.
I do love Philly. I have to shout out to anyone who's listening. I shouldn't tell everyone my spot, so it's a really small place, so it's going to be pretty full. Village Whiskey in Rittenhouse Square. The best cheeseburger I've ever had in my life. I have it every time I go up to Philly. There's a record store right down the block that I go to and buy some good punk records. It's pretty much living the dream for McAneer right there.
I can't believe how on brand that is. That is the most on brand thing I've ever heard you say, man.
I actually have a picture of the front of the restaurant, sitting in my basement because I love the burger that much. Ironically, it's right next to a Ron Swanson picture that I have in my basement as well. So I'm just turning into him. I want to move on a little bit to the D2 game. We'll talk briefly about this championship game, Merrimack versus Limestone. Kyle, I know you're more familiar with Merrimack, but you did watch all the games this weekend. If you could just talk about each team briefly in what you see from them in this kind of stretch run and how they're playing.
I think you would have gotten a more interesting matchup if Lemoyne had beaten Merrimack and played Limestone. That's like my first thought, and that sounds weird to be like, oh, the losing team would have been a different game. It's not even a better game. It's just it would have been a different clash of styles. As it is, Limestone against Merrimack is going to be, you know, these are two dudes carrying two swords and no shields. There will be a very little in the way of actual slowdown 6-on-6 defense. Although, you know, Limestone has tried that from time to time, but I think their modus operandi is get up quick and keep cutting. And that's what they do. And by the way, that's what Merrimack wants to do too. I think if you're looking at one thing that could be a difference, Merrimack's faceoffs have not been good this year. And that is one of the main differences between this team and last year's team. I think they're also have a little less depth defensively than they did for their championship team in 2018. But from what I've seen from Limestone, you know, even if you shut down Larson Sundown, they still have so many guys that can mid-range shots. The one thing about the difference between Limestone and Merrimack is that Limestone doesn't really take bad shots, and Merrimack is a huge fan of quote-unquote bad shots, but they still stick them because they have guys like Charlie Bertrand taking them. And I think I've said this before, and this is going to probably offend many people, but I think Charlie Bertrand would be a starting midfielder on an ACC team. Like, that's how good he is. That's how athletic he is. That's how strong he is. That's how fast he is. You know, teams deal with him by putting two guys on him, not one, or sending a quick double, like, over and over and over. Lemoyne did a great job of it, but he still got free to score. And he also is a huge weapon on man up. They run man up plays to get him the ball at the top of the box to just bomb it down. And I think that was the difference in their game against Lemoyne. And, you know, Limestone does have a tendency to foul, especially when they're up. It's not that Limestone is not a smart team. It's that they play this one style that is very breakneck combined with, you know, cycling. So there's a lot of touches on a Limestone possession, and it doesn't necessarily set up for one person to get a shot. You know, with Merrimack, I think if you want to stop Merrimack, the key is probably to stop, you know, the Thomas brothers and Sean Black. If you can do that, you've got a really good shot of beating them. I just don't think a lot of teams have done that this season, albeit more teams have done it this season than last season. But Limestone, from what I've seen, they actually have a really interesting kind of wide cutter-based pass pick-down offense that I really enjoyed watching against UIND. And actually, UIND ran a similar thing against them. They just didn't have enough possessions. But, you know, Limestone, they are tough. That's the one thing that I think people might not expect. They don't, like I said, they don't care about fouling. They're in it to kind of mess you up if you get inside. So, you know, Merrimack has the ability to can some outside shots, but they also take questionable shots from the outside. I think it's going to be a very close game. You know, I think last year I would have said, bet your house on Merrimack winning the championship. I don't think you can bet your house on either one of these teams to win it this year.
Kyle, I think the one point you make is extremely valid. I think this is going to be the most physical, toughest game of the entire weekend. I think you're going to have the most chirping. I think you're going to have the most big hits. I think you're going to have the most, you know, big defensemen taking that extra slash. And I'm not saying these teams are dirty. That's not what I mean. I just mean that there's just an edge to both of these teams that I don't know if any of the other teams in the field really have compared to them. The intangible factor, Limestone last year, disappointing year, you know, injuries, and then just, you know, some other stuff happened behind the curtain, and the team just did not perform like Limestone's performed, like Limestone is supposed to perform. So this year, you got a group of Larson Sundown, Tyler Papa, Clark Walter, Matt Bennett in his last year. These guys want to win. They know that they essentially had a bad year last year by Limestone standards. I think that helps them. Merrimack, though, this is the last year, the last game as a Division II program. You know, if you're a guy on this, say you're a freshman on this team, you have not won the national championship game like, you know, the sophomores, juniors, and seniors have for Merrimack. You know that this is your shot at a national championship, and you probably won't have that shot the next 3 years as you transition to D1. So you're going to go out there, you're going to be selling out as much as humanly possible. Same thing for those upperclassmen. You know, you want to go out D2 with a bang. What better way to kind of make your mark, you know, as you enter D1 than entering as the champion? So I think there's both teams are going to be playing their best game because of the intangible factor as well. If I'm making a pick, I'm going to pick Limestone for the sole reason of the face-off X and just how I think they can control the possessions in that. And, you know, it's going to be a shootout. They're going to have more possessions and going to win this game. Kyle, who's your pick?
I don't pick against Morgan. I don't do it. So I'm picking Merrimack. I can't. And again, it's one of those things where I've seen them play in person. I know the coaching staff. I know the attitude they have is not what everyone agrees with, but I like it. I don't usually like it. I don't usually like the super, super confidence, but Merrimack backs it up a lot. And I got to pick him in this game.
Josh, I know you're not as much of a D2 guy, but let's give your pick.
I'm going with Limestone.
You are a wise man, Josh. So we're basically doing the I'm the South guy, Kyle's the North guy thing is going to be kind of our routine now.
I mean, you're talking about two
of these. You were supposed to bring balance to the force, Matt.
I put the pressure on you for this one to make the pick. Last time I gave you the easy cop-out by siding with Kyle. This one I'm putting the pressure on you, McNair.
I will represent the South as best as I can. And, we got an interview with Coach Gadelka where he talks about a lot of good stuff. It's a really insightful, interesting interview, as you would expect from him. And then we got a championship game. We'll follow up with a Division II, Division III championship. We'll all be in Philly covering those games. So we're going to have a ton of content on the website. We're looking forward to it. Follow us on Twitter. If by any chance you're in Philly and see us and run into us, please interact with us. Say hello. It's going to be a fun weekend. So this is the best time of the year. Well, I know we say that pretty much every week, but really this is the last time we're going to be seeing this level of lacrosse for quite a while. So let's enjoy it, have fun, and we will see you all next week.
This week on the podcast, we have a very special guest. Lynchburg coach Steve Gadelka is here to talk about what championship weekend entails and these two teams. We have a fantastic game on tap, Cabrini versus Amherst. I don't know if this is the one that people were thinking was going to be on the slate for championship weekend, but we're happy after a great season that two great teams are going to face each other. Coach, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Now, we're looking at this game and championship week, all the hoopla that surrounds it. Just a few years ago, you know, you guys and Lynchburg were that first-time team there at the championship. How would you say, what is your kind of overarching piece of advice, you know, for a team and a coaching staff that's kind of going into this very, very big and bright moment?
Well, I think, you know, probably, you know, take all the pieces that you can control, you know, whether that's, you know, scan a report, you know, getting your guys as healthy as you can, et cetera, et cetera. But because knowing that when you're going into this, they're going into Philly, as these folks are, and it happens to be the same place that we were, you know, it's just going to be, everything's going to be a little bigger. Everything's going to be a little brighter. You know, the atmosphere is, you think it's one thing, you get there, it's a little bit better. You know, it's a little different. And so those are the factors you're probably not going to be able to control. You know, I think try to control what you can control, you know, and worry about those things and let everything else just fall in its place. Because it will, and no doubt about it, it will. And the NCAA championship committee will do a great job of putting you in the right spots at the right time. They do an awesome job of that, I think, and not putting too much on your plate. You know, just enough to know where you have to be and all those good things. And really, most importantly, I think for your student athletes, I mean, it's just an incredible experience for them. And this weekend will provide a wonderful experience for all those guys playing.
Coach, I know you guys played Cabrini this year. I know you have seen Amherst play in person as well, whether it was the Mustang Classic or other times this year. But for people, I think people are a bit more familiar with Amherst, maybe, you know, especially listeners to this because we have talked about them at length so much. But what is, you know, What makes Cabrini go? Like, we've talked about some of their guys, a Jordan Krug kid, but what makes them such a hard team to defend and a tough out every time they step on the field?
Yeah, you know, I think Jordan Krug gets a lot of the attention, you know, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a very, very dynamic player for them and has been for several years, you know. But on top of that, I think, you know, starting from the back to the front, I think they got – you know, the goalie is a senior, and he's had a great year, and I think he is much better than maybe a lot of people know about. You know, then defensively, you know, they can play you man to man, they can play you zone, they can play you a couple different ways, and are very confident on that side of the field. You know, and they got some great short stick D-middies that can take the ball, as does Amherst. I think that's kind of going to be a really fun part of the game to watch, is both the short stick D-middies for Cabrini, as well as that position for Amherst, are probably, you know, two of their stronger, you know, parts of their team. I think those coaches ask those guys to do a lot. So, but then really Cabrini, you know, I think on their offensive end, I mean, you play against him, you watch him, you know, and obviously you put a lot of attention on Krug, but while you're doing that, you have to account, you know, for their other attackmen, as well as their midfielders, that they can score in a variety of different ways. And just like any really great team at this time of year, they will, you know, and I know they did this against Salisbury on Sunday. If they're man up, they'll make you pay for it. And, you know, that's always a sign of a really good team. If you're in the penalty box, you know, they're going to make you pay. So they have a lot of different ways to beat you, both on both ends of the field, whether it's in transition, 6-on-6D, they're very stable. 6-on-6 offense, they're really good. But then they can also beat you in, you know, in some of these weird, the weird pockets. And, you know, and that's what makes the team so dangerous this time of year. And I think Amherst is really no different. You know, so it kind of makes it such an intriguing matchup heading into Sunday.
Coach, you know, for both of these teams, for Amherst, they beat the team that, you know, had beat them multiple times this year. For Cabrini, they beat both teams that beat them in the regular season, including Salisbury, right, who's kind of, you know, the giant you have to slay in the South in order to get to this point. Just from your experience as a head coach, how do you avoid maybe that kind of letdown after such a big moment that, you know, both of these teams had really big moments that, you know, you can kind of look at them as that was our Super Bowl and we just won it. How do you kind of move past that to the next one?
Well, you know, I think both those teams won on Sunday, you know, and I think there was probably a lot of people patting them on the back on Monday and probably even to yesterday, you know, but I think you wake up today in the middle of the week. And I know, you know, when we made it, we won in kind of a really unique way, but we were down a bunch to Gettysburg in that semifinal game and had to, like, you know, make a pretty outstanding comeback to win that game. And so, but I think when you get to the middle of the week, it's kind of like, that's kind of done, you know, just like it normally is on a normal week, you know? And the best part about it is your kids have everything to look forward to, you know, I mean, it's not like you got a, you know, a middle of the road opponent at the next game where you think you might, you know, you guys might not show up for that. I mean, this is now you're playing for everything. And, you know, I think both Amherst and Cabrini, like you said, you know, beating Williams, who had kind of had their number throughout the year, and Cabrini, who had lost to Salisbury earlier in York and kind of took down both of those guys in a matter of 4 or 5 days. Now, I think it's probably, you know, in the middle of the week, I think all the players and the coaches have probably settled in to say, okay, what's our best plan to beat Cabrini, and what's going to be our best plan to beat Amherst? And by the time you get to Sunday afternoon, I think all the other stuff will fizzle itself out and it will just become a great game.
I think what's so interesting is we also saw Amherst play a little zone against Williams last week, and both these teams are so diverse with, you know, the cool thing that we love about D3 is that you get to play Wednesday, Saturday, and now you have a whole week off. You have a Sunday to Sunday, you know. Are you guys practicing? How much time, you know, would you be spending this week? You know, I know you'll have a look team doing what Amherst is doing, but I'm interested in, like, the time you'll spend for a man-to-man versus zone. Or are you guys already so used to playing against both of those that it's sort of just the status quo? Are there a lot of changes that are made this week? I mean, I guess that could depend on the opponent, but how do you kind of parcel up that week?
You know, I think it kind of comes back to how you're handling stuff at the end of the year. You know, I think, you know, some teams at the end of the year are getting to a consistent routine of Wednesday, Saturday. And you know, you got to figure out that tempo, you know, whereas, This is maybe the first week in a couple of weeks, you know, since the NCAA tournament started, where you do have a little bit of time. But at the same time, I think, you know, number one, I'm not like, I'll be the first one to tell you I'm not the professional, or I'm not the end all be all to these answers, because I know, we tried the best way possible to figure out, Tufts in a couple of days, and obviously we're not that successful at doing that. So, but I think, I think you gotta work with what got you there, right? And both of those teams have had all these great opponents they played in the tournament, and then now you got another great opponent, but you're probably going to see a very similar stuff that you saw in those other teams you just played against. And so, maybe there's something you're going to see on film that you can exploit that helps you out. But I think probably more times than not, these guys are just going to sit there and say, okay, this is what we do the best, and we're going to go into the thing swinging with what we do the best. And if we have to make adjustments throughout the day, on Sunday, we'll do the best we can, just like they have been all season long.
Coach, knowing what you know about both of these teams, I'm not going to ask you to pick a winner, but just in general.
Thanks.
In general, just how do you see the game? What directions could you see the game going? How would it flow? What kind of tempo, pace, maybe goal totals you could expect from this one?
Well, I think it's interesting, because I think I happened to see, Amherst at the Mustang Classic earlier in March, 2 months ago, pretty much. They played RIT and what was a great, I think you were there, Matt, or some folks from Inside Lacrosse there. It was a great game. I mean, it was one of the best, lacrosse games, standing right on the sideline. Our locker room was right next to the field. Our guys were wide. It was just a great game. It was a back and forth. And we've had the good fortune of playing Cabrini over the years. And I think both teams, what's going to be really exciting for the fans, and I think we just all, if you watched all the lacrosse games this past weekend, Division One, even Division Two, Division Three, there were goals being scored. The Amherst Williams score was a little less than the Cabrini Salisbury game, but the quarterfinal games, York Cabrini was a great game. Salisbury Denison was a great game. Amherst and those guys playing up in North, there were some great games being played. And so I think when you look at this game going forward, there's going to be some runs. I got a feeling that someone's going to score three, maybe four goals in a row, and when that happens in the game might be pretty important. It might be 4-0 at the beginning of the game. It could be, 7-2, and then all of a sudden it's 7-6. I think both these teams have the absolute capability on going on those runs. And so whichever defense or whichever team can manage that the best, I think is going to help them, in determining maybe who the winner is of that game. I think face-offs, will play an interesting part, as they do in every game. But with the shot clock, it's kind of taking that away a little bit, as we saw this weekend with all the levels of lacrosse that were being played. And I think the last component, I think, which is always a big component, is I think the big guys, the big dogs on either team, are going to get their goals somehow, some way. They always do. I think it's maybe the kid that's not, who's on the scouting report, but maybe he's not the most highlighted guy on the scouting report. It could be a short stick demon for either team, because they have very good ones. Both teams do. You might have two goals, maybe even have a hat trick in this game, just because those opportunities present themselves in the game that really can sway, one team. I think it's going to be, an unbelievable game. I mean, really excited for the matchup, just because I think they're going to go against each other pretty much toe to toe. And I think that's going to be the exciting part about it. There's not like a contrast in styles playing this game. They're pretty similar. They just don't match up a lot in the regular season. But I think what people are going to see is a pretty intriguing game, because the styles match so well. And it's just going to see which team plays the best on that, for those 60 minutes.
Coach, I'll hit with one more last one before we let you go. Amherst and Cabrini, both first time making it to the national championship. Wesleyan was a first-timer last year. How important is it, and what does it say about the landscape of D3? In the last two or three years, we've had a newcomer. We're used to the Salisbury and Tufts, but, you guys were there in 2015. What does it say about D3 as we continue to see some new faces and start to familiarize ourselves with not just the Salisbury, Tufts, Cortland, something we've been used to for the last, 10 years or so?
Yeah, you know, Josh, I don't know if it speaks so much about Division III lacrosse. I think it just speaks to the growth of our game. You know, I mean, there are so many more kids playing, you know, from coast to coast. And, you know, where the game is not growing necessarily is at the Division I level. And so, you know, which is, you know, hopefully that changes. I mean, it's grown a little bit. But there's only X amount of places for really outstanding, talented kids to go and play Division I lacrosse, you know. And so there are so many more kids now that are extremely talented that are still, they're trying to find a home, you know. And so Division II, Division III are providing great backdrops for some of these outstanding players. And so, you know, every team is getting more and more talented, you know, and there's better resources for coaches. There's more stuff that we're doing, I think, as a sport that is growing the game and making a better product, and even changing the rules like the 80-second shot clock. That has helped our sport, I think, personally. And so the talent level is only going to get better. And I think what you're going to find probably over the next, you know, 10 to 15 years is there's going to be more teams that are maybe experiencing this for the first time or the second time. But I think there's been more chances for growth outside the norm that we've seen and at our level for sure. And it's exciting. It's an exciting time in Division III lacrosse. There's no doubt about it. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the talent that is being played around the country and trying and finding those kids the best place to go to school.
Coach, appreciate so much your time and overall your guidance all year with everything you've done, and you know, appreciate the listens and the guidance with the podcast and all of our coverage all year. Thank you.
Well, thank you. You guys do I think I speak for everyone in Division III. The coverage that you all have given us has been outstanding. What's great about our sport is, you know, we got some two great teams playing on Sunday, and it should be an exciting time for Division III lacrosse.
This is the Division II, Division III podcast.